Yeah, I think he has a good grip on things and knows, you know, growing up an hour down the road, how important it is to do that sort of stuff in the city, and how far it goes and how much weight his name carries already, even though he's been here for a couple months. So, yeah, I mean, it's very mature of him, of his age. He's a guy that, I guess, understands things and the way it works, and it's nice to see. You know, I was just happy to be part of it.
Obviously, the first couple shifts are going to be a little different, but as far as it goes, it's my first game center, so and the new rules too with the centermans and the face-offs, but no, just play hockey the way I've been playing and adjust our systems a little bit.
Max Pacioretty, Jonathan Drouin, Washington Capitals at the Bell Center tonight. Welcome back. It's hour number 3 on Game Night on TSN 690. Mitch Melnyk, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo playing alongside Alex Hemsky.
You know, hopefully I can help them in the defensive zone, in the offensive zone, and just kind of take a little bit of pressure from them, carry the puck.
And he's been around for a long time. We'll kind of, you know, pace himself. He's smart enough to know not to come in and re-injure himself. So, you know, I think as we move on here, we'll be able to evaluate him better and better. You know, and the more games he plays, the more he'll be able to evaluate his play. But we also have to understand the situation that he's in and give him that opportunity to get to where we think he can get.
Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Dagwoods. Voted called Montreal's best sandwich in Montreal 3rd year in a row. Thanks, Montreal. You gotta love a Dagwoods sandwich.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
Excellent. How are you, Mitch?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Big practice game tonight at the Bell Center, Pierre, with Jonathan Drouin wearing a Habs jersey for the first time.
What kind of roster is Washington dressing?
Well, I know Ovechkin's playing, and I think Kuznetsov is playing, and the rest, Gallo, you got to take care of the rest.
Yeah, and Connolly's playing. And
I didn't hear any defensemen.
Let's see. I'm not even sure.
Brooks Orpik.
Brooks Orpik is playing. Okay, keep your head up, kids.
So this should be a really good dress rehearsal for Montreal. I'm excited for their fans to, you know, obviously see Jonathan in a live fire exercise is probably the best way to describe it. Don't overreact if he's great, and don't beat him up if he's not so great. It's just, it's getting ready. It's dress rehearsal. That's what it is.
So when you hear Julien, for example, speak of Hemsky, that's especially, we know there's no debate about, you know, how Drouin, if he stays healthy, is going to perform offensively this season. He's going to create offense. We know Pacioretty is going to score 30 to 35 if he's healthy all year. The question is who's going to play on their right side, and Hemsky's getting a first shot. So that to me is intriguing tonight if I was in the rink.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I still don't see the defensive awareness on that team. I heard what Alish said. That really has never been his calling card. But again, we'll see. It's all fitting the pieces together. Maybe they catch lightning in a bottle and really takes off. You don't know. It's unfair to prejudge. It really is unfair for me or anybody else to prejudge. But I'm just excited to see how Drouin and Pacioretty hook up offensively. And if Hemsky can be, you know, where half as good as he was when he was in Edmonton, that would be a decent fit, but I don't know if he has that much left. I really don't.
I think those 15 games I played last season helped me a lot with the confidence I can still play, and just give me the confidence to go to the summer and work hard and, you know, come back and see what will happen.
And again, the key there, what Hemsky was talking about coming back late last season, he's had hip issues on both sides of his body, and that's obviously, that goes without saying what that could do to a hockey player.
Well, that's why I'm saying what I'm saying. I've had an amazing relationship with him for a very long time. I respect him a ton as a person and as a player, but you have to call it the way it is. I mean, he's got a lot of beaten up parts to his body. He's nowhere near the player he once was. Everybody knows that in the league, including him. He knows that. But maybe, just maybe, he's going to have enough to help him this year. I don't know that, and neither does anybody else. You'll have to see.
Rod?
When being a super speed skater is not part of your game, and it really hasn't been part of Hemsky's game, does that mean you can refine how you protect the puck, how you dictate pace when you're not going to go all out with speed?
Well, he moves it fast. The puck moves faster than you can skate it. And he moves it quickly, which is important. And he's got really good vision. And he can protect the puck in confined areas. He's got a little nifty move to him here and there, side to side. But again, I think the strength of his game is his ability to distribute quickly. And that, again, it goes back to what we talked about the other day. I watch 15- and 16-year-old players, the best on both sides of the border play. They all basically skate the same. They're all catching up in terms of size. It's the ones that stand out are the ones that can make the plays quickly, because you just there's not a lot of room, even at that level. And at the NHL level, there's even less.
Rod, you're making Hemsky sound like Alex Semin. Yeah, Alex Semin, it was clear. Okay, here's the deal with veteran players. Some of them are done when you see them, and they look done, and they're done. Others, like Gallo was talking about Thomas Plekanec. Thomas plans to play another 5 years in the NHL, and he's always going to look done in training camp. That's the way he is. And it takes some guys in their 30s, you know, a few weeks to get going, and you can't really judge anything. But when you're on a bubble, everything is magnified. So we were waiting for Semin. Okay, it's a new team. He's coming off a terrible year. He's got a lot to prove. There's no pace to his game whatsoever. I wonder if this is going to get better. It didn't. Hemsky is not Alex Semin, Rod.
Yeah, I understand that. In terms of pace. It's completely unfair to compare the two, because Hemsky, I believe, wants to be a part of this team and wants to contribute. Semin was like a black hole of misery, not just with this team, but with other teams, too. I don't see Alex Hemsky as being capable of sustaining top two line minutes over a long period of time.
That's fine, but you keep talking about his lack of skating ability. I don't think that's as much of an issue right now. Is his body broken down? Hemsky's a better skater than Semin was, Pierre? No?
Actually, with pace, they'd be about similar, but Hemsky's a far more wise player than Semin ever was, and that's why I talked about his ability to move the puck quickly. Again, I know what I told you when Semin came, but I'm not going to say the same thing about Hemsky, because I'm on Mitch's team here. I'm not going to sell him short, because I'm not going to prejudge him. It's not fair. I'd seen enough of Semin to know that was never going to work in Montreal, and I told you that before it even happened.
Okay, so another guy who's, we talked yesterday about a perfect seventh defenseman is Mark Streit, is going to play against with Shea Weber tonight. He signed an NHL contract, so I don't think he's playing for his NHL career here. But again, you're going to see a guy who's probably behind the play, and people are probably going to overreact.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing with Mark, you have to understand, that's why I said it's not bad to have a seventh defenseman that's old, because you don't have to play him a lot of minutes, and he's got to be a specialist. And in Mark's case, his specialty is the power play. And, you know, heaven forbid something bad happens to Shea. You've lost Markov. You traded Subban. You're running out of components on the back end on the power play. You hope Petrie's going to bounce back. But, no, I think Streit's actually a good fit. He'll never, ever cause problems. He was around the Penguins team. All I ever saw him do is work hard, even though he knew he wasn't going to play. I don't see that as a bad signing at all.
The first few practices, you feel a little rusty, and just adapt to the new system and everything. You know, it's pretty much new. Even I played here 10 years ago. So, but it's going well, going in the right direction, and just want to keep working hard and play well.
All right, so Mark Streit is one of those guys who figures if he's in the lineup, he's going to get power play time. I'm of the opinion, and I think a lot of people share it, Pierre, if you're going to have, I don't care how good you are, unless you're a Hall of Famer, offensively from the blue line, the chances of you scoring as a unit increase with an offensive-minded extra forward on the ice. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
So, and we didn't see it for the most part. They experimented a little bit during Therrien's tenure, but we didn't see it. Here's Claude Julien on that.
Et puis, de temps en temps, t'as des bons attaquants qui sont capables de jouer à l'arrière aussi, qui sont capables de bien transporter la rondelle ou qui ont une très bonne vision, qui peuvent faire de bons jeux. Alors, tu peux toujours utiliser quatre attaquants, mais de temps en temps, t'as des défenseurs qui sont capables de faire la même chose aussi.
Well, you had Torrey Krug. A lot of people didn't think Torrey Krug would ever play in the NHL. And Claude turned him loose, and the rest is history. Torrey's a very serviceable NHL player. So I agree with him 100% on that. Those are the teams that win, by the way. Duncan Keith is an example of that in Chicago. Seabrook even was an example of that in Chicago. You look at Pittsburgh, everybody, oh, Pittsburgh will never be able to overcome the loss of Christopher Letang. Trevor Daley really helped it. Olimata really helped it out. They had access. They had their young guys jumping in and their old guys jumping in. So it makes a big difference. I totally agree.
Talking about the power play, how do coaches like to approach power play units in preseason games? Do you want to actually work on some of the things you're going to do in the regular season? Is it almost like a glorified practice? Or do you want to see some of the guys on the bubble get opportunities in offensive roles?
Well, it depends how advanced they are in terms of implementing their schematics. You know, I can speak to it from three different opportunities. One with a really good team in Pittsburgh, one with a mediocre team in Hartford that was really young, and one with an expansion team in Ottawa that just needed to get something going. So they're all different. I think in Montreal's case, because a lot of their weaponry is there, you probably want to implement a lot of your schematic early and get going and work on first your breakout, then your entry, and then your attack. It was zone time, but the number one thing on power plays, and it's never talked about enough amongst the media and the fans, the initial draw in the new NHL is so critically important because every power play starts in the offensive zone. So if you can't win the initial draw, you're always going to have to go back and retrieve the puck, and it's a big problem.
Big problem for this team a year ago.
That's why I'm bringing it up. And so you've got it. That is a number one priority for any power play. And if you don't have, for instance, if you don't win the faceoff, your guys better have a plan for retrieval. And if you do win the faceoff, you better know where to go and not waste the opportunity. So there's a lot that goes into that. But I would say the number one thing for a lot of these teams, and they don't pay attention to it, winning faceoffs, the initial draw on the power play.
I'd like to prevent our team from going to the penalty box for a faceoff violation. So we're just kind of giving the guys a little bit of instruction on what's expected and what to do and maybe get them to practice that a little bit.
So after the skate today, that's what they worked on. Kirk Muller lined up the guys. And, of course, Jonathan Drouin, this is his first full-time experience. And apparently he won every draw that he took. The other centerman was Thomas Plekanec.
Well, that's okay. That's good. Build up your confidence. Jonathan's got really quick hands, and a big part of winning faceoffs, especially in the offensive zone, is having quick hands. Because remember, even if you're the road team, if you're in the offensive zone, you don't have to put your stick down first, so you can get a little bit of forward momentum and come over the top and utilize quick hands. That's just a little, you know, black arts kind of thing that's going on in the league. But here's something for the fans to remember, because this has become a big topic of discussion around the league. In 1961, the NHL took out the foot lines, the T line. Remember the T line, Mitch, that used to be around the circle, the faceoff dot? Those disappeared. From 1961 until 1984, those things disappeared. There were no lines.
Yeah, you had Phil Esposito taking draws sideways.
Just people need to remember this. And then you had no lines from 84 until 96. No lines. And they went in 96. The current lines you have today went in 1996. So the league's actually had it where they've had the T bar in front of the faceoff circle, and then they took it out for a long period of time, and now it's back in. But you know what's interesting? And I think this is really interesting. You know, if you go to the offside faceoff dots and you go to the center ice faceoff dot, you know that there's no line, right? For your feet?
Right.
Like it is in the offensive zone or the defensive zone?
Okay, so what are you getting at here?
So what I'm saying is if the league really wants to make a big push on controlling faceoff situations, they better wake up because there's no lines in the neutral zone on any of the faceoff dots.
Right, the brackets, the reference brackets on
correct.
The ice. Yeah.
You see the stuff on TV, you guys talk about it now, but you know, we're just trying to figure out where to put our feet, where to put a stick. They saw a game in Quebec, so you know, it's going to be a quick learning curve for us, I'm sure, today.
Pierre, we've all seen guys through the years, Hall of Famers, they cheat on the faceoffs. They used to cheat. Some of them are still cheating big time. The best guy I ever saw, and somebody, when I mentioned Doug Jarvis earlier in the show, somebody said, well, how about Yannick Perreault? Yannick Perreault was the best of his time by far in the NHL. I don't specifically remember paying as much attention to Yannick Perreault because it was a given. But as a kid, I was so, that was the year when the Canadians were doing everything. They had everything but a guy who could win faceoffs, right? So they went out and got Doug Jarvis.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a center ice position in Pittsburgh in 91 with Lemieux, who was really good on faceoffs. Francis, who was off the charts good. Trotsky is in the Hall of Fame, and a big reason why his ability to play defense and dominate the puck off faceoffs. And Randy Gillen. Those were our four center icemen. I know Gillen won 15 in a row in a playoff game once against Boston. So your faceoffs are really important. It's a critical part of the game. And I learned that from coaching early on. And I've always been a proponent of paying attention to faceoff, not only just winning the draw, but what you do with it after. If you win it, what do you do? And if you lose it, what do you do? So that's an important part. And you're right about Doug Jarvis, by the way. He was masterful. And Claude Julien knows that because he helped Claude win a cup.
Well, I can't help but think, you mentioned Tory Krug a few minutes ago. You can't help but wonder if Claude Julien is thinking of Tory Krug when he watches Victor Mete.
We're trying to give a young prospect here who we feel good about, you know, in this organization, a good puck moving, good skating defenseman, the opportunity to grow with the right partner right now that's going to allow him to be better when he leaves here to go back to junior. If that's the case, then, you know, he'll have gained a lot from that.
Sounds logical, huh?
Very logical. Well said. Coach has been through it. Mate's a good player. Just don't speed up the process. You know, I'm doing a game tomorrow, Mitch, between Vancouver and Los Angeles from China at 7:30 tomorrow morning. And I was going through the bios of John Stevens, who I coached in Hartford, and Travis Green, who's the coach in Vancouver. Travis Green's first 2.5 years of hockey, and he was a first-round pick in 1989. His first 2.5, and this is how it used to be. First 2.5 years of hockey, he played with the Capital District Islanders under Butch Goring. And that's how it used to be. Mate's a good player, and he's with a really good junior program, obviously, in London. But don't rush it. And what Claude just said is really well said. I really agree with that.
Yesterday on this show...
Yeah, I was thinking about two teams, Ottawa and Columbus, because I'm looking at potential players that would make sense in this type of deal. And if I'm Colorado, I mean, I love what I saw from Thomas Chabot last year, and I think that trade might make a little sense.
Would you do that, Pierre?
Repeat that trade, because I just want to get my head around. I want to take it slow. Go ahead.
Thomas Chabot for Matt Duchesne.
No.
You wouldn't trade Chabot for Duchesne, is that what you're saying? Not one for one.
No.
Would you include him in a bigger deal?
No.
Pierre.
What?
He's been traded for Matt Duchesne. No, I'm just kidding. Here this morning.
I know you're
kidding. This morning on the morning show with Connor McKenna.
And we've seen some tires being kicked in Ottawa on this. I'd be curious to know your perspective on that. Thomas Chabot would be their Mikhail Sergachev, for
no
example.
Chance.
No chance, you say?
Zero chance, in my mind.
Bob McKenzie and Pierre Maguire on the same page.
Yeah, no, listen, people have to wrap their head around this. That's why, listen, I'm not beating up the Canadians on what they did, but there were a lot of eyes rolling around the league when they traded Sergachev for Drouin. That's all I'm going to tell you. I still think it's going to work out for both teams, which is great, and I hope it works out for both teams. But no, now I'm going to throw a team in there. You know, one of the guys I talk to a lot, he emails me a lot, is Jimmy Murphy. I got a lot of time and respect for Jimmy as a hockey guy. He really works at his craft hard. He threw a name out there that was really, I think, poignant. What about Pittsburgh for Matt Duchesne? No Matt Cullen, no Nick Bonino. What about Pittsburgh? They have more than enough assets. They've got an elite puck-moving defenseman at the minor league level, and Derek Pouliot played in the Western Hockey League. I could see Pittsburgh being a potential landing spot for Matt Duchesne. And Crosby and Duchesne are summertime training partners. They're very close.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be fair.
Of course it wouldn't. I'm with Bobby Mack, though. I told you yesterday, I'm telling you, I think Chabot's going to be a superstar player in the league.
Okay.
I do. I think he's going to be, and he's so much younger. What's Duchesne, 26?
Yeah, 25.
25 or 26?
I believe I looked at it yesterday. He's 25.
20. Okay, 25 will be 26.
Yeah.
Close enough. I just think Thomas is going to be a fantastically important player for that Ottawa team. And don't forget, Carlson's going to have unrestricted free agency coming up in 2 years, and he's way underpaid. Way underpaid.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. 26 years old on Duchesne.
All right. Yeah. I'm hot, Mitch.
Yeah, get your facts straight.
I'm sorry.
So, Pierre, again, you're saying, a battle for not a home ice team in the first round of the playoffs. If they get into the playoffs, they're going to hang around.
And Montreal, I don't think, it doesn't mean they can't win in the playoffs. I just don't see them as a home ice team. No, I don't.
Right. Okay. No. I just to reference, bodog.ca set the lines for the for each team, over under on point totals.
Yep.
Pittsburgh 105, Tampa Bay 102.5, Washington 104. And then the Canadians at 99.5.
That puts them in home ice.
Followed by Columbus at 96, the Rangers and the Leafs at 95, Boston and Carolina 92.5, Ottawa 91.5, Philly 90.5.
What did Bulldog pick for the Stanley Cup last year before the season started?
That's a really good question, Rod, Pierre. That's a really good question. I wish we should save these. If we're gonna quote from them, we ought to save them.
If we're gonna quote from them, I just want to know what their track record is.
Well, I'm gonna guess that Pittsburgh was pretty up there, pretty high up there.
That's safe to say.
You know one of the biggest moving lines, and the only reason I can talk about it is because I was in Vegas for the awards, and I was with a bunch of NBC execs, and they were looking at the odds to win the cup, and one of the teams where the odds shrunk tremendously is Tampa. Since the start of the summer to now, I think they were 30-1 at the beginning. I don't know what they are now, but I don't think the odds are as good for you if you're betting.
So, Bodog's favorites, September 16th, 2016. So, almost exactly a year ago. Their two favorites, the Blackhawks and the Penguins.
There you go. One was bang on, and the other one lost in the first round and didn't score a goal on home ice.
How about can the Blackhawks get in on Matt Duchesne, or are they just tapped out here?
I think it's tough cap-wise for them, really tough. So I don't know if they can get in. But, I watched a little bit of their game last night with Columbus, and I think they've got some interesting stuff going on there. I really do. And I think the biggest thing with them is they look quicker, and I think that's important for a team. But the other thing is Nick Schmaltz is playing in the two-hole right now. And if he and Kane can get going, and Saad and Taves can get going, they're going, and Anisimov's in the three-hole, that's going to make it really, really tough for teams in the West. Chicago will be better than some people think.
We'll do it again tomorrow at 5:05. Pierre Rod was just going to throw something out there.
The Blackhawks are over the salary cap as of today.
I don't think they can do anything with Duchesne. By the way, a couple things. To all Hebraic friends, happy holiday. And to some lady that lives on the mountain looking down, Mom, happy birthday.